50 years ago, the United States and North Vietnam signed the Paris Peace Accords, and over the next few months, 591 POWs would be released and returned to the U.S. Then, Navy Lieutenant Junior Grade Porter Halliburton was one of them. For a year and a half, Halliburton was listed as killed in action after being shot down over North Vietnam. But he was actually alive, and he survived captivity as a prisoner of war for 7 years, 3 months, and 28 days, enduring brutal torture and isolation. Halliburton was later honored with a Silver Star, the Bronze Star, 3 Purple Hearts, and 7 Air Medals. He tells his remarkable story in his recent book, Reflections on Captivity, and now Commander Porter Halliburton joins us. It's such an honor to have you with us, sir.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you.
Well, you were shot down over North Vietnam on your 76th mission of the war. Would you begin by describing one of your first activities as a POW, being handcuffed and marched through the streets of Hanoi?
So 50 of us were marched through the streets of Hanoi, handcuffed 2x2, and we were told to bow our heads in respect and so on, and the crowd got out of hand because they were whipping the crowd up. Pretty soon we were being hit with rocks and sticks and mud and spit and who knows what, shoes and so on. And I really thought we were going to be slaughtered in the street.
And one of many harrowing stories that you tell that happened during your time as a POW. Meanwhile, back home, you had been declared killed in action. Your wife, your infant daughter thought you were dead. There was actually a memorial service for you. Your mother had a tombstone made for the family plot.
That's right. Yeah.
How did your family find out that you were actually alive?
Well, it was actually, I didn't know this for a long time, but it was through Jim Stockdale, Admiral Stockdale, who was a senior naval officer there. And he and his wife and the DIA had come up with a scheme of invisible carbon paper, which was smuggled in a picture. And he used that to, for the first time, to talk about the torture. And then he listed the first 40 names of POWs that he had memorized being there. And I was one of them.
You and your fellow POWs had names for all the different camps that you were sent to: Heartbreak Hotel, Alcatraz, the Zoo. And the most pessimistic among you thought you'd be in captivity maybe 2 years at most, but 7-plus years as a POW.
Yeah. Well, at the very beginning, we just didn't see how the war was going to last any longer than 2 years. But, of course, there were lots of miscalculations made about the war.
One of the many compelling stories in your book is about Major Fred Cherry, your first cellmate. He was a black Air Force officer who was very badly injured. Tell us about your time with Major Cherry.
Well, the Vietnamese moved me in with him, thinking that would be one of the worst things they could do, to move a young white boy in the Navy in with a Air Force officer, black. And so this was a game changer for me. It changed my whole attitude about my captivity and what we needed to do to survive. And I was ordered to care for him, and that was the best thing they could have done. They didn't know that, but I now had something very important to do in my life other than trying to survive and do my duty and stay as healthy as I could. And so that was really a game changer for me in terms of my captivity.
You saved his life many, many times.
Well, he said that I did, and I guess, you know, any other person that had been with him would have done the same thing. But yes, he nearly died, mostly from the infection. They tried to operate on his shoulder and put his arm back, but it was such a botched job, and they didn't know much about antibiotics. And yeah, he almost died from the infection several times.
Became one of your closest friends for life after all that.
Absolutely. We became like brothers for many years until he died back in 2016.
You write about the torture that you endured and the terror of it. Can you talk about that and how you survived it and generated the will to resist it?
Well, I don't like to dwell too much on that aspect of it, but yeah, it was one of the aspects that was so important, is how do you deal with that? And I think all of us learned that we could be broken. I didn't think I could be broken, but I was. I mean, you get to a point where the pain and terror is just, it takes your mind. And so learning how to deal with that was one of the more important things that we learned from that experience. And we called that the second line of resistance. They could force you to do something, but they didn't have complete control over what that was. And so we used their ignorance of American culture and humor and history and everything against them. When we were forced to write something, we could write something that they didn't really understand, and a knowing American reader would understand that.
You were put in isolation often, which is different, you say, than solitary confinement. You wrote, "I'd rather be tortured than put in isolation." What was that like for you?
Well, I mean, I've had other POW friends say that. They spent a long time in isolation, which means that you have no contact with anyone. Solitary confinement, really, we refer to as having communication, tapping on the walls or something. You're not completely isolated. And isolation over a long period of time can affect your mind in very strange ways. And I had been in isolation for quite a while before I was given the choice of a better place or a worse place. And that's why I felt so terrified at the time, because I couldn't imagine a worse place than where I was. I didn't think I could survive. And so because I had been in isolation, I didn't know what was going on. I saw other POWs through the crack in the door doing normal things. And here I was, I couldn't understand why I was being treated that way.
As a POW, you said you hated your captors. It was a form of defense. Hatred was your armor. And then on the way home, some of your buddies talked about how they wanted to exact revenge for what had happened to them. But you decided you were going to forgive. Tell me about the moment that you made that choice.
Well, I just knew that I couldn't carry that hatred home. I had already said these people would never adversely affect my life again. And so when we walked through the gates of the Hanoi Hilton, the Hua Lo prison, I just turned around and I said, "I forgive you." And all that hatred went away. That armor fell off, and I walked out of two prisons that day. And I have rid my life of hatred.
Shortly after you were released, you were asked by a journalist to sum up your 7-plus years as a POW. You said, "I wouldn't do it again for $1 million, but I wouldn't take $1 million for what I learned from that experience." Can you sum up for us 50 years later what you learned and how it changed you?
Well, I learned a lot of things, and these things affect my life. Two of the lessons that I learned were the most important. I learned the first one at the very beginning, and that was the importance of choosing. We have a God-given gift of free will. The Vietnamese could take away every freedom that we enjoyed, and they did, except they couldn't take away that. And so you always have the choice about how you react to your situation, and making those choices is the most important thing you can do. And then the lesson about forgiveness at the end, and of course you have to choose to forgive. So those two things, you know, have shaped my life ever since.
That's Commander Porter Halliburton. He survived as a prisoner of war in Vietnam for 7 years, 3 months, and 28 days. His book, Reflections on Captivity, is out now. Mr. Halliburton, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.